At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haul away, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Dramatis Personae of the Merchant of Venice. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. The Merchant of Venice by William Shakespeare. Dramatis Personae. The Duke of Venice. Read by
Filippo Joachim.
The Prince of Morocco, suitor to Portia. Read by
Mark Smith.
The Prince of Aragon, suitor to Portia. Read by
David Nicol.
Antonio, a Merchant of Venice. Read by
David O'Connell.
Bassanio, his friend. Read by
M.B.
Celanio, friend to Antonio and Bassanio. Read by
Rosalind Wills.
Salarino, friend to Antonio and Bassanio. Read by
Laurie Ann Walden.
Gratiano, friend to Antonio and Bassanio. Read by
David Leeson.
Lorenzo, in love with Jessica. Read by
Aaron Elliott.
Shylock, a rich Jew. Read by
E.T.K.
Tibble, a Jew, his friend. Read by
Carolyn Francis.
Lancelot Gobbo, a clown, servant to Shylock. Read by
L. Lambert Lawson.
Old Gobbo, father to Lancelot. Read by
David Lawrence.
Leonardo, servant to Bassanio. Read by
Laurie Ann Walden.
Balthazar, servant to Portia. Read by
David Lawrence.
Stefano, servant to Portia. Read by
Lucy Perry.
Portia, a rich heiress. Read by
Arielle Lipshaw.
Nerissa, her waiting maid. Read by
Megan Kunkel.
Jessica, daughter to Shylock. Read by Elizabeth Klett. Clerk in Court. Read by
Ernst Patinama.
And narrated by
Dennis Sayers.
End of Dramatis Personae.
Act One of The Merchant of Venice. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, visit LibriVox.org. The Merchant of Venice by William Shakespeare. Act One. Scene One. Venice. A street. Enter Antonio, Salarino, and Salanio.
In sooth, I know not why I am so sad. It wearies me. You say it wearies you. But how I caught it, found it, or came by it, what stuff 'tis made of, whereof it is born, I am to learn. And such a want-wit sadness makes of me that I have much ado to know myself.
Your mind is tossing on the ocean. There, where your argosies, with portly sail, like signors and rich burghers on the flood, or, as it were, the pageants of the sea, do overpeer the petty traffickers that curtsy to them, do them reverence, as they fly by them with their woven wings.
Believe me, sir, had I such venture forth, the better part of my affections would be with my hopes abroad. I should be still plucking the grass to know where sits the wind, peering in maps for ports and piers and roads, and every object that might make me fear misfortune to my ventures out of doubt would make me sad.
My wind, cooling my broth, would blow me to an egg when I thought what harm a wind too great might do at sea. I should not see the sandy hourglass run, but I should think of shallows and of flats, and see my wealthy Andrew docked in sand, veiling her high top lower than her ribs to kiss her burial. Should I go to church and see the holy edifice of stone, and not bethink me straight of dangerous rocks, which, touching but my gentle vessel's side, would scatter all her spices on the stream, enrobe the roaring waters with my silks, and, in a word, but even now worth this, and now worth nothing? Shall I have the thought to think on this, and shall I lack the thought that such a thing bechanced would make me sad? But tell not me, I know Antonio is sad to think upon his merchandise.
Believe me, no. I thank my fortune for it, my ventures are not in one bottom trusted, nor to one place, nor is my whole estate upon the fortune of this present year. Therefore my merchandise makes me not sad.
Why, then you are in love.
Fie, fie.
Not in love, neither? Then let us say you are sad because you are not merry, and 'twere as easy for you to laugh and leap and say you are merry because you are not sad. Now, by two-headed Janus, nature hath framed strange fellows in her time, some that will evermore peep through their eyes, and laugh like parrots at a bagpiper, and others of such vinegar aspect that they'll not show their teeth in way of smile, though Nestor swear the jest be laughable.
Enter Bassanio, Lorenzo, and Gratiano.
Here comes Bassanio, your most noble kinsman, Gratiano and Lorenzo. Fare you well. We leave you now with better company.
I would have stayed till I had made you merry, if worthier friends had not prevented me.
Your worth is very dear in my regard. I take it your own business calls on you, and you embrace the occasion to depart.
Good morrow, my good lords.
Good signors both. When shall we laugh? Say when. You grow exceeding strange. Must it be so?
We'll make our leisures to attend on yours.
Exeunt Salarino and Salanio.
My lord Bassanio, since you have found Antonio, we too will leave you, but at dinner-time, I pray you have in mind where we must meet.
I will not fail you.
You look not well, Signor Antonio. You have too much respect upon the world. They lose it that do buy it with much care. Believe me, you are marvelously changed.
I hold the world but as the world, Gratiano. A stage where every man must play a part, and mine a sad one.
Let me play the fool. With mirth and laughter let old wrinkles come, and let my liver rather heat with wine than my heart cool with mortifying groans. Why should a man whose blood is warm within sit like his grandsire, cut in alabaster, sleep when he wakes, and creep into the jaundice by being peevish? I tell thee what, Antonio, I love thee, and 'tis my love that speaks. There are a sort of men whose visages do cream and mantle like a standing pond, and do a wilful stillness entertain, with purpose to be dressed in an opinion of wisdom, gravity, profound conceit, as who should say, I am Sir Oracle, and when I ope my lips, let no dog bark. Oh, my Antonio, I do know of these that therefore only are reputed wise for saying nothing, when, I am very sure, if they should speak, would almost damn those ears which, hearing them, would call their brothers fools. I'll tell thee more of this another time, but fish not with this melancholy bait, for this fool gudgeon, this opinion. Come, good Lorenzo, fare ye well a while. I'll end my exhortation after dinner.
Well, we will leave you then till dinner-time. I must be one of these same dumb wise men, for Gratiano never lets me speak.
Well, keep me company but 2 years more, and thou shalt not know the sound of thine own tongue.
Fare you well. I'll grow a talker for this gear.
Thanks, if faith, for silence is only commendable in a neat's tongue dried, and a maid not vendible.
Exeunt Gratiano and Lorenzo.
Is that anything now?
Gratiano speaks an infinite deal of nothing, more than any man in all Venice. His reasons are as 2 grains of wheat hid in 2 bushels of chaff. You shall seek them all day ere you find them, and when you have them, they are not worth the search.
Well, tell me now, what lady is the same to whom you swore a secret pilgrimage that you today promised to tell me of?
Tis not unknown to you, Antonio, how much I have disabled mine estate by something showing a more swelling port than my faint means would grant continuance. Nor do I now make moan to be abridged from such a noble rate. But my chief care is to come fairly off from the great debts wherein my time something too prodigal hath left me gauged. To you, Antonio, I owe the most, in money and in love, and from your love I have a warranty to unburden all my plots and purposes how to get clear of all the debts I owe.
I pray you, good Bassanio, let me know it, and if it stand as you yourself still do within the eye of honour, be assured, my purse, my person, my extremest means lie all unlocked to your occasions.
In my school days, when I had lost one shaft, I shot his fellow of the selfsame flight, the selfsame way, with more advised watch, to find the other forth, and by adventuring both, I oft found both. I urge this childhood proof because what follows is pure innocence. I owe you much, and, like a wilful youth, that which I owe is lost. But if you please to shoot another arrow that self-way which you did shoot the first, I do not doubt, as I will watch the aim, or to find both, or bring your latter hazard back again, and thankfully rest debtor for the first.
You know me well, and herein spend but time to wind about my love with circumstance. And out of doubt you do me now more wrong in making question of my uttermost than if you had made waste of all I have. Then do but say to me what I should do, that in your knowledge may by me be done, and I am pressed unto it. Therefore speak.
In Belmont is a lady richly left, and she is fair, and fairer than that word, of wondrous virtues. Sometimes from her eyes I did receive fair speechless messages. Her name is Portia, nothing undervalued to Cato's daughter, Brutus Portia. Nor is the wide world ignorant of her worth, for the four winds blow in from every coast renowned suitors, and her sunny locks hang on her temples like a golden fleece, which makes her seat of Belmont Colchis strand, and many Jasons come in quest of her. Oh, my Antonio, had I but the means to hold a rival place with one of them, I have a mind presages me such thrift that I should questionless be fortunate.
Thou knowest that all my fortunes are at sea. Neither have I money nor commodity to raise a present sum. Therefore go forth. Try what my credit can in Venice do, that shall be racked even to the uttermost to furnish thee at Belmont fair Portia. Go presently, inquire, and so will I, where money is. And I no question make to have it of my trust or for my sake.
Exeunt. Scene 2. Belmont. A room in Portia's house. Enter Portia and Nerissa.
By my troth, Nerissa, my little body is aweary of this great world.
You would be, sweet madame, if your miseries were in the same abundance as your good fortunes are. And yet, for aught I see, they are as sick that surfeit with too much as they that starve with nothing. It is no mean happiness, therefore, to be seated in the mean. Superfluity comes sooner by white hairs, but competency lives longer.
Good sentences, and well pronounced.
They would be better, if well followed.
If to do were as easy as to know what were good to do, chapels had been churches, and poor men's cottages princes' palaces. It is a good divine that follows his own instructions. I can easier teach 20 what were good to be done, than to be one of the 20 to follow mine own teaching. The brain may devise laws for the blood, but a hot temper leaps o'er a cold decree. Such a hare is madness, the youth, to skip o'er the meshes of good counsel, the cripple. But this reasoning is not in the fashion to choose me a husband. Oh, me, the word choose! I may neither choose who I would, nor refuse who I dislike. So is the will of a living daughter curbed by the will of a dead father. Is it not hard, Nerissa, that I cannot choose one nor refuse none?
Your father was ever virtuous, and holy men at their death have good inspirations. Therefore the lottery that he hath devised in these three chests, of gold, silver, and lead, whereof who chooses his meaning chooses you, will no doubt never be chosen by any rightly, but one who you shall rightly love. But what warmth is there in your affection toward any of these princely suitors that are already come?
I pray thee overname them, and as thou namest them I will describe them, and according to my description level at my affection.
First there is the Neapolitan prince.
Aye, that's a colt indeed, for he doth nothing but talk of his horse, and he makes it a great appropriation to his own good parts that he can shoe him himself. I am much afeard my lady his mother played false with a smith.
Then there is the county palatine.
He doth nothing but frown, as who should say, an you will not have me, choose. He hears merry tales and smiles not. I fear he will prove the weeping philosopher when he grows old, being so full of unmannerly sadness in his youth. I had rather be married to a death's head with a bone in his mouth than to either of these. God defend me from these two.
How say you by the French lord, Monsieur Le Bon?
God made him, and therefore let him pass for a man. In truth, I know it is a sin to be a mocker, but he, why, he hath a horse better than the Neapolitans, a better bad habit of frowning than the Count Palatine. He is every man in no man. If a throstle sing, he falls straight a-capering. He will fence with his own shadow. If I should marry him, I should marry 20 husbands. If he would despise me, I would forgive him, for if he love me to madness, I shall never requite him.
What say you, then, to Falconbridge, the young baron of England?
You know I say nothing to him, for he understands not me, nor I him. He hath neither Latin, French, nor Italian, and you will come into the court and swear that I have a poor pennyworth in the English. He is a proper man's picture, but alas, who can converse with a dumb show? How oddly he is suited! I think he bought his doublet in Italy, his round hose in France, his bonnet in Germany, and his behaviour everywhere.
What think you of the Scottish lord, his neighbour?
That he hath a neighbourly charity in him, for he borrowed a box of the ear of the Englishman, and swore he would pay him again when he was able. I think the Frenchman became his surety, and sealed under for another.
How like you the young German, the Duke of Saxon, his nephew?
Very vilely in the morning when he is sober, and most vilely in the afternoon when he is drunk. When he is best, he is a little worse than a man, and when he is worst, he is little better than a beast. And the worst fall that ever fell, I hope I shall make shift to go without him.
If he should offer to choose, and choose the right casket, you should refuse to perform your father's will if you should refuse to accept him.
Therefore, for fear of the worst, I pray thee set a deep glass of Rhenish wine on the contrary casket. For if the devil be within, and that temptation without, I know he will choose it. I will do anything, Nerissa, ere I will be married to a sponge.
You need not fear, lady, the having any of these lords. They have acquainted me with their determinations, which is indeed to return to their home, and to trouble you with no more suit, unless you may be won by some other sort than your father's imposition, depending on the caskets.
If I live to be as old as Sibylla, I will die as chaste as Diana, unless I be obtained by the manner of my father's will. I am glad this parcel of wooers are so reasonable, for there is not one among them but I dote on his very absence, and I pray God grant them a fair departure.
Do you not remember, lady, in your father's time, a Venetian, a scholar and a soldier, that came hither in company of the Marquis of Montferrat?
Yes, yes, it was Bassanio. As I think, so was he called.
True, madame. He, of all the men that ever my foolish eyes looked upon, was the best deserving, a fair lady.
I remember him well, and I remember him worthy of thy praise.
Enter a servant.
How now, what news?
The four strangers seek for you, madam, to take their leave, and there is a forerunner come from a fifth, the Prince of Morocco, who brings word the prince, his master, will be here to-night.
If I could bid the fifth welcome with so good heart as I can bid the other four farewell, I should be glad of his approach. If he have the condition of a saint and the complexion of a devil, I had rather he should shrive me than wive me. Come, Nerissa. Sirrah, go before. Whilst we shut the gate upon one wooer, another knocks at the door.
Exeunt. Scene 3. Venice, a public place. Enter Bassanio and Shylock.
3,000 ducats. Well.
Aye, sir, for 3 months.
For 3 months. Well.
For the which, as I told you, Antonio shall be bound.
Antonio shall become bound. Well.
May you stead me? Will you pleasure me? Shall I know your answer?
3,000 ducats for 3 months, and Antonio bound.
Your answer to that?
Antonio is a good man.
Have you heard any imputation to the contrary?
No. My meaning in saying he is a good man is to have you understand me that he is sufficient. Yet his means are in supposition. He hath an argosy bound to Tripolis, another to the Indies. I understand, moreover, upon the Rialto he hath a third at Mexico, a fourth for England, and other ventures he hath squandered abroad. But ships are but boards, sailors but men. There be land rats and water rats, land thieves and water thieves, I mean pirates. And then there is the peril of waters, winds, and rocks. The man is, notwithstanding, sufficient. 3,000 ducats. I think I may take his bond.
Be assured you may.
I will be assured I may. And that I may be assured, I will bethink me. May I speak with Antonio?
If it please you to dine with us.
Yes, to smell pork, to eat of the habitation which your prophet, the Nazarite, conjured the devil into. I will buy with you, sell with you, talk with you, walk with you, and so following, but I will not eat with you, drink with you, nor pray with you. What news on Rialto? Who is he comes here?
Enter Antonio.
This is Signor Antonio.
Aside.
How like a fawning publican he looks. I hate him, for he is a Christian. But more, for that in low simplicity he lends out money gratis, and brings down the rate of usance here with us in Venice. If I can catch him once upon the hip, I will feed fat the ancient grudge I bear him. He hates our sacred nation, and he rails even there where merchants most do congregate on me, my bargains, and my well-won thrift, which he calls interest. Cursed be my tribe if I forgive him.
Shylock, do you hear?
I am debating of my present store, and by the near guess of my memory, I cannot instantly raise up the gross of full 3,000 ducats. What of that? Tibble, a wealthy Hebrew of my tribe, will furnish me. But soft, how many months do you desire?
To Antonio.
Rest you fair, good signor. Your worship was the last man in our mouths.
Shylock, albeit I neither lend nor borrow by taking nor by giving of excess, yet, to supply the ripe wants of my friend, I'll break a custom.
To Bassanio.
Is he yet possessed how much ye would?
Aye, 3,000 ducats.
And for 3 months.
I had forgot. 3 months, you told me so. Well then, your bond, and let me see. But hear you, methought you said you neither lend nor borrow upon advantage.
I do never use it.
When Jacob grazed his uncle Laban's sheep, this Jacob from our holy Abram was, as his wise mother wrought in his behalf, the third possessor, aye, he was the third.
And what of him? Did he take interest?
No, not take interest, not as you would say, directly interest. Mark what Jacob did. When Laban and himself were compromised that all the eanlings which were streaked and pied should fall as Jacob's hires, the ewes, being rank, in end of autumn turned to the rams. And when the work of generation was between these woolly breeders in the act, the skilful shepherd peeled me certain wands, and in the doing of the deed of kind he stuck them up before the fulsome ewes, who then, conceiving, did in eaning time fall party-coloured lambs, and those were Jacob's. This was a way to thrive, and he was blessed. And thrift is blessing, if men steal it not.
This was a venture, sir, that Jacob served for, a thing not in his power to bring to pass, but swayed and fashioned by the hand of heaven. Was this inserted to make interest good? Or is your gold and silver ewes and rams?
I cannot tell. I make it breed as fast. But note me, signor.
Mark you this, Bassanio. The devil can cite scripture for his purpose. An evil soul producing holy witness is like a villain with a smiling cheek, a goodly apple rotten at the heart. Oh, what a goodly outside falsehood hath.
3,000 ducats. 'Tis a good round sum. 3 months from 12, then let me see the rate.
Well, Shylock, shall we be beholding to you?
Signor Antonio, many a time and oft in the Rialto you have rated me about my monies and my usances. Still have I borne it with a patient shrug, for sufferance is the badge of all our tribe. You call me misbeliever, cutthroat dog, and spet upon my Jewish gabardine, and all for use of that which is mine own. Well, then, it now appears you need my help. Go to, then. You come to me, and you say, Shylock, we would have monies. You say so. You, that did void your room upon my beard, and foot me as you spurn a stranger cur over your threshold. Monies is your suit. What should I say to you? Should I not say, hath a dog money? Is it possible a cur can lend 3,000 ducats? Or shall I bend low, and in a bondman's key, with bated breath and whispering humbleness, say this, fair sir, you spit on me on Wednesday last, you spurned me on such a day, another time you called me dog, and for these courtesies I'll lend you thus much monies.
I am as like to call thee so again, to spit on thee again, to spurn thee too. If thou wilt lend this money, lend it not as to thy friends. For when did friendship take a breed for barren metal of his friend? But lend it rather to thine enemy, who, if he break, thou mayest with better face exact the penalty.
Why, look how you storm! I would be friends with you, and have your love. Forget the shames that you have stained me with. Supply your present wants, and take no doit of usance for my monies, and you'll not hear me. This is kind I offer.
This were kindness.
This kindness will I show. Go with me to a notary, seal me there your single bond, and in a merry sport, if you repay me not on such a day, in such a place, such sum or sums as there are expressed in the condition, let the forfeit be nominated for an equal pound of your fair flesh, to be cut off and taken in what part of your body pleaseth me.
Content, in faith. I'll seal to such a bond, and say there is much kindness in the Jew.
You shall not seal to such a bond for me, or rather, dwell in my necessity.
Why, fear not, man. I will not forfeit it. Within these 2 months, that's a month before this bond expires, I do expect return of thrice 3 times the value of this bond.
Oh, Father Abram, what these Christians are, whose own hard dealings teaches them suspect the thoughts of others. Pray, you tell me this. If he should break his day, what should I gain by the exaction of the forfeiture? A pound of man's flesh taken from a man is not so estimable, profitable neither, as flesh of muttons, beefs, or goats. I say, to buy his favour, I extend this friendship. If he will take it, so. If not, adieu, and for my love, I pray you wrong me not.
Yes, Shylock, I will seal unto this bond.
Then meet me forthwith at the notary's. Give him direction for this merry bond, and I will go and purse the ducat straight. See to my house, left in the fearful guard of an unthrifty knave, and presently I'll be with you.
Hie thee, gentle Jew.
Exit Shylock.
This Hebrew will turn Christian. He grows kind.
I like not fair terms and a villain's mind.
Come on. In this there can be no dismay. My ships come home a month before the day.
Exeunt. End of Act One. Act Two of The Merchant of Venice. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, visit LibriVox.org. The Merchant of Venice by William Shakespeare. Act Two. Scene One. Belmont, a room in Portia's house. Flourish of cornets. Enter the Prince of Morocco and his followers. Portia, Nerissa, and others of her train.
Mislike me not for my complexion, the shadowed livery of the burnished sun, to whom I am a neighbour, and near bred. Bring me the fairest creature northward born, where Phoebus's fire scarce thaws the icicles, and let us make incision for your love, to prove whose blood is reddest, his or mine. I tell thee, lady, this aspect of mine hath feared the valiant. By my love, I swear, the best-regarded virgins of our clime have loved it too. I would not change this hue, except to steal your thoughts, my gentle queen.
In terms of choice, I am not solely led by nice direction of a maiden's eyes. Besides, the lottery of my destiny bars me the right of voluntary choosing. But if my father had not scanted me, and hedged me by his wit, to yield myself his wife who wins me by that means I told you, yourself, renowned prince, then stood as fair as any comer I have looked on yet for my affection.
Even for that I thank you. Therefore I pray you, lead me to the caskets to try my fortune. By this scimitar, that slew the Sophie and a Persian prince, that won 3 fields of Sultan Soliman, I would o'erstare the sternest eyes that look, outbrave the heart most daring on the earth, pluck the young sucking cubs from the she-bear, yea, mock the lion when he roars for prey, to win thee, lady. But alas the while, if Hercules and Lycus play at dice, which is the better man, the greater throw may turn by fortune from the weaker hand. So is Alcides beaten by his page, and so may I, blind fortune leading me, miss that which one unworthier may attain, and die with grieving.
You must take your chance, and either not attempt to choose at all, or swear before you choose, if you choose wrong, never to speak to lady afterward in way of marriage. Therefore be advised.
Nor will not. Come, bring me unto my chance.
First forward to the temple. After dinner your hazard shall be made.
Good fortune, then, to make me blessed or cursed among men.
Cornets and Exeunt. Scene 2. Venice. A street. Enter Launcelot Gobbo.
Certainly my conscience will serve me to run from this Jew, my master. The fiend is at mine elbow, and tempts me, saying to me, Gobbo, Launcelot Gobbo, good Launcelot, or good Gobbo, or good Launcelot Gobbo, use your legs, take the start, run away. My conscience says, no, take heed, honest Launcelot, take heed, honest Gobbo, or, as aforesaid, honest Launcelot Gobbo, do not run, scorn running with thy heels. Well, the most courageous fiend bids me pack. Via, says the fiend, away, says the fiend. For the heavens, rouse up a brave mind, says the fiend, and run. Well, my conscience, hanging about the neck of my heart, says very wisely to me, my honest friend Launcelot, being an honest man's son, or rather, an honest woman's son, for indeed my father did something smack, something grow to, he had a kind of taste. Well, my conscience says, Launcelot, budge not. Budge, says the fiend. Budge not, says my conscience. Conscience, say I, you counsel well. Fiend, says I, you counsel well. To be ruled by my conscience, I should stay with the Jew, my master, who, God bless the mark, is a kind of devil. And, to run away from the Jew, I should be ruled by the fiend, who, saving your reverence, is the devil himself. Certainly the Jew is the very devil incarnal. And, in my conscience is but a kind of hard conscience. To offer to counsel me to stay with the Jew. The fiend gives the more friendly counsel. I will run, fiend. My heels are at your commandment. I will run.
Enter old Gobbo with a basket.
Master, young man, you, I pray you, which is the way to master Jews?
Aside.
Oh, heavens! This is my true begotten father, who, being more than sand-blind, high gravel blind, knows me not. I will try confusions with him.
Master, young gentleman, I pray you, which is the way to master Jews?
Turn up on your right hand at the next turning. but at the next turning of all, on your left, marry, at the very next turning, turn of no hand, but turn down indirectly to the Jew's house.
By God, Santis, 'twill be a hard way to hit. Can you tell me whether one Launcelot that dwells with him, dwell with him or no?
Talk you of young Master Launcelot?
Aside.
Mark me now. Now will I raise the waters. Talk you of young Master Launcelot?
No master, sir, but a poor man's son, his father, though I say it, is an honest, exceeding poor man, and, God be thanked, well to live.
Well, let his father be what a will. We talk of a young Master Launcelot.
Your worship's friend and Launcelot, sir.
But I pray you, ergo, old man, ergo, I beseech you. Talk you of young Master Launcelot?
Of Launcelot, ain't please your mastership.
Ergo, Master Launcelot, talk not of Master Launcelot, father, for the young gentleman, according to fates and destinies, and such odd sayings, the sisters three, and such branches of learning, is indeed deceased. Or, as you would say in plain terms, gone to heaven.
Mary, God forbid! The boy was the very staff of my age, my very prop.
Do I look like a cudgel or a hovel post, or a staff or a prop? Do you know me, father?
Alack the day! I know you not, young gentleman. But I pray you tell me, is my boy, God rest his soul, alive or dead?
Do you not know me, father?
Alack, sir, I am sandblind. I know you not.
Nay, indeed, if you had your eyes, you might fail of the knowing me. It is a wise father that knows his own child. Well, old man, I will tell you news of your son. Give me your blessing. Truth will come to light. Murder cannot be hid long. A man's son may, but in the end truth will out.
Pray you, sir, stand up. I am sure you are not Launcelot, my boy.
Pray you, let's have no more fooling about it. Give me your blessing. I am Launcelot, your boy that was, your son that is, your child that shall be.
I cannot think you are my son.
I know not what I shall think of that, but I am Launcelot, the Jew's man, and I am sure Marjorie, your wife, is my mother.
Her name is Marjorie, indeed. I'll be sworn, if thou be Launcelot, thou art my own flesh and blood. Lord worship might he be. What a beard hast thou got! Thou hast got more hair on thy chin than Dobbin my thrill-horse has on his tail.
It should seem, then, that Dobbin's tail grows backward. I am sure he had more hair on his tail than I have on my face when I last saw him.
Lord, how art thou changed! How dost thou and thy master agree? I have brought him a present. How greed you now?
Well, well, but for mine own part, as I have set up my rest to run away, so I will not rest till I have run some ground. My master's a very Jew. Give him a present. Give him a halter. I am famished in his service. You may tell every finger I have with my ribs. Father, I am glad you are come. Give me your present to one Master Bassanio, who indeed gives rare new liveries. If I serve him not, I will run as far as God has any ground. O rare fortune! Here comes the man. To him, father, for I am a Jew, if I serve the Jew any longer.
Enter Bassanio with Leonardo, with other followers.
You may do so, but let it be so hasted that supper be ready at the farthest by 5 of the clock. See these letters delivered, put the liveries to making, and desire Gratiano to come anon to my lodging.
Exit a servant.
To him, father.
God bless your worship.
Gramercy, wouldst thou aught with me?
Here is my son, sir, a poor boy.
Not a poor boy, sir, but the rich Jew's man. That would, sir, as my father shall specify.
He hath a great infection, sir, as one would say, to serve.
Indeed, the short and the long is, I serve the Jew, and have a desire, as my father shall specify.
His master and he, saving your worship's reverence, are scarce cater cousins.
To be brief, the very truth is that the Jew, having done me wrong, doth cause me, as my father, being, I hope, an old man, shall fruitify unto you.
I have here a dish of doves that I would bestow upon your worship, and my suit is...
In very brief, the suit is impertinent to myself, as your worship shall know by this honest old man. And, though I say it, though old man, yet poor man, my father.
One speak for you both. What would you?
Serve you, sir.
That is the very defect of the matter, sir.
I know thee well. thou hast obtained thy suit. Shylock, thy master, spoke with me this day, and hath preferred thee. If it be preferment to leave a rich Jew's service to become the follower of so poor a gentleman.
The old proverb is very well parted between my master Shylock and you, sir. You have the grace of God, sir, and he hath enough.
Thou speakest it well. Go, father, with thy son. Take leave of thy old master, and inquire my lodging out.
To a servant.
Give him a livery more guarded than his fellows. See it done.
Father, in. I cannot get a service, no. I have ne'er a tongue in my head.
Looking on his palm.
Well, if any man in Italy have a fairer table which doth offer to swear upon a book, I shall have good fortune. Go to. Here's a simple line of life. Here's a small trifle of wives. Alas, 15 wives is nothing. 11 widows and 9 maids is a simple coming in for one man. And then to scrape drowning thrice, and to be in peril of my life with the edge of a featherbed, here are simple scapes. Well, if fortune be a woman, she's a good wench for this gear. Father, come. I'll take my leave of the Jew in the twinkling of an eye.
Exeunt Launcelot and old Gobbo.
I pray thee, good Leonardo, think on this. These things being bought and orderly bestowed, return in haste. For I do feast to-night my best esteemed acquaintance. Hie thee, go!
My best endeavours shall be done herein.
Enter Gratiano.
Where's your master?
Yonder, sir, he walks.
Exit.
Signor Bassanio?
Gratiano.
I have suit to you.
You have obtained it.
You must not deny me. I must go with you to Belmont.
Why, then you must. But hear thee, Gratiano, thou art too wild, too rude, and bold of voice. Parts that become thee happily enough, and in such eyes as ours, appear not false. But where thou art not known, why, there they show something too liberal. Pray thee, take pain to allay with some cold drops of modesty thy skipping spirit, lest through thy wild behaviour I be misconstrued in the place I go to, and lose my hopes.
Signor Bassanio, hear me. If I do not put on a sober habit, talk with respect, and swear but now and then, wear prayer books in my pocket, look demurely, nay more, while grace is saying, hood mine eyes thus with my hat, and sigh and say, Amen. Use all the observance of civility, like one well studied in a sad ostent to please his grandam. Never trust me more.
Well, we shall see your bearing.
Nay, but I bar to-night. You shall not gauge me by what we do to-night.
No, that were pity. I would entreat you rather to put on your boldest suit of mirth, for we have friends that purpose merriment. But fare you well, I have some business.
And I must to Lorenzo and the rest, but we will visit you at supper-time.
Exeunt. Scene 3. The same. A room in Shylock's house. Enter Jessica and Launcelot.
I am sorry thou wilt leave my father so. Our house is hell, and thou, a merry devil, didst rob it of some taste of tediousness. But fare thee well. There is a ducat for thee. And, Launcelot, soon at supper shalt thou see Lorenzo, who is thy new master's guest. Give him this letter. Do it secretly. And so farewell. I would not have my father see me and talk with thee.
Adieu. Tears exhibit my tongue. Most beautiful pagan, most sweet Jew. If a Christian, do not play the knave and get thee, I am much deceived. But adieu. These foolish drops do something drown my manly spirit. Adieu.
Farewell, good Launcelot.
Exit Launcelot.
Alack, what heinous sin is it in me to be ashamed to be my father's child? But though I am a daughter to his blood, I am not to his manners. O Lorenzo, if thou keep promise, I shall end this strife, become a Christian and thy loving wife.
Exit. Scene 4. The same. A street. Enter Gratiano, Lorenzo, Salarino, and Salanio.
Nay, we will slink away in supper time, disguise us at my lodging, and return all in an hour.
We have not made good preparation.
We have not spoke as yet of torchbearers.
'Tis vile, unless it may be quaintly ordered, and better in my mind not undertook.
'Tis now but 4 o'clock. We have 2 hours to furnish us.
Enter Lancelot with a letter.
Friend Lancelot, what is the news?
And it shall please you to break up this. It shall seem to signify.
I know the hand, in faith, 'tis a fair hand, and whither that a paper it writ on, is the fair hand that writ?
Love news, in faith.
By your leave, sir.
Whither goest thou?
Marry, sir, to bid my old master, the Jew, to sup tonight with my new master, the Christian.
Hold, here, take this. Tell gentle Jessica, I will not fail her, speak it privately. Go, gentlemen.
Exit Lancelot.
Will you prepare you for this mask tonight? I am provided of a torchbearer.
Aye, Mary, I'll be gone about it straight.
And so will I.
Meet me and Graciano at Graciano's lodging some hour hence.
'Tis good we do so.
Exeunt Salarino and Salanio.
Was not that letter from fair Jessica?
I must needs tell thee all. She hath directed how I shall take her from her father's house, what gold and jewels she is furnished with, what page's suit she hath in readiness, if e'er a Jew, her father, come to heaven, it will be for his gentle daughter's sake, and never dare misfortune cross her foot, unless she do it under this excuse, that she is issued to a faithless Jew. Come, go with me, pursue this as thou goest. Fair Jessica shall be my torchbearer.
Exeunt. Scene 5. The same. Before Shylock's house. Enter Shylock and Lancelot.
Well, thou shalt see, thy eyes shall be thy judge, the difference of old Shylock and Bassanio. But, Jessica, thou shalt not gormandize as thou hast done with me. What, Jessica? And sleep and snore and rend the peril out. Why, Jessica, I say!
Why, Jessica!
Who bids thee call? I do not bid thee call.
Your worship was wont to tell me I could do nothing without bidding.
Enter Jessica.
Call you? What is your will?
I am bid forth to supper, Jessica. There are my keys. But wherefore should I go? I am not bid for love. They flatter me, but yet I'll go in hate to feed upon the prodigal Christian. Jessica, my girl, look to my house. I am right loath to go. There is some ill a-brewing towards my rest, for I did dream of money-bags to-night.
I beseech you, sir, go. My young master doth expect your approach.
So do I his.
And they have conspired together. I will not say you shall see a mask, but if you do, then it was not for nothing that my nose fell a-bleeding on Black Monday, last at 6 o'clock in the morning. Falling out that year on Ash Wednesday was 4 year in the afternoon.
What, are there masks? Hear you me, Jessica. Lock up my doors, and when you hear the drum and the vile squealing of the wry-necked fife, clamber not you up to the casements then, nor thrust your head into the public street to gaze on Christian fools with varnished faces. But stop my house's ears, I mean my casements. Let not the sound of shallow foppery enter my sober house. By Jacob's staff, I swear I have no mind of feasting forth to-night. But I will go. Go you before me, sirrah. Say I will come.
I will go before, sir. Mistress, look out the window for all this. There will come a Christian by, will be worth a Jewess's eye.
Exit Lancelot.
What says that fool of Hagar's offspring, huh?
His words were farewell, mistress, nothing else.
The patch is kind enough, but a huge feeder. Snail slow in profit, and he sleeps by day more than the wildcat. Drones hive not with me, therefore I part with him, and part with him to one that I would have him help to waste his borrowed purse. Well, Jessica, go in. Perhaps I will return immediately. Do as I bid you. Shut doors after you. Fast bind, fast find. a proverb never stale in thrifty mind.
Exit.
Farewell. And if my fortune be not crossed, I have a father, you a daughter lost.
Exit. Scene 6. The same. Enter Gratiano and Salarino. Masked.
This is the penthouse under which Lorenzo desired us to make stand.
His hour is almost past.
And it is marvel he outdwells his hour, for lovers ever run before the clock.
Oh, 10 times faster Venus pigeons fly to seal love's bonds new made than they are wont to keep obliged faith unforfeited.
That ever holds. Who riseth from a feast with that keen appetite that he sits down? Where is the horse that doth untread again his tedious measures with the unbated fire that he did pace them first? All things that are with more spirit chased than enjoyed. How like a younker or a prodigal the scarfed bark puts from her native bay, hugged and embraced by the strumpet wind. How like the prodigal doth she return, with over-weathered ribs and ragged sails, lean, rent, and beggared by the strumpet wind.
Here comes Lorenzo. More of this hereafter.
Enter Lorenzo.
Sweet friends, you're patient for my long abode. Not I, but my affairs have made you wait. When you shall please to play the thieves for wives, I'll watch as long for you then. Approach, here dwells my father Jew. Ho, who's within?
Enter Jessica, above, in boy's clothes.
Who are you? Tell me for more certainty, albeit I'll swear that I do know your tongue.
Lorenzo, and thy love.
Lorenzo, certain, and my love indeed. For who love I so much? And now who knows but you, Lorenzo, whether I am yours?
Heaven and thy thoughts are witness that thou art.
Here, catch this casket. It is worth the pains. I am glad 'tis night. You do not look on me, for I am much ashamed of my exchange. But love is blind, and lovers cannot see the pretty follies that themselves commit. For if they could, Cupid himself would blush to see me thus transformed to a boy.
Descend, for you must be my torch-bearer.
What, must I hold a candle to my shames? They in themselves, good sooth, are too light. Why, 'tis an office of discovery, love, and I should be obscured.
So are you, sweet, even in the lovely garnish of a boy. But come at once, for the closed night doth play the runaway, and we are stayed for at Bassanio's feast.
I will make fast the doors, and gild myself with some o' ducats, and be with you straight.
Exit above.
Now, by my hood, a Gentile and no Jew.
Beshrew me, but I love her heartily, for she is wise, if I can judge of her, and fair she is, if that mine eyes be true. And true she is, as she hath proved herself, and therefore like herself, wise, fair, and true. Shall she be placed in my constant soul?
Enter Jessica.
What, art thou come? On, gentlemen, away! Our masking mates buy this time for us stay.
Exit with Jessica and Salarino. Enter Antonio.
Who's there?
Signor Antonio.
Fie, fie, Gratiano. Where are all the rest? 'Tis 9 o'clock, our friends all stay for you. No mask tonight, the wind has come about. Bassanio presently will go aboard. I have sent 20 out to seek for you.
I am glad, aunt. I desire no more delight than to be under sail and gone to-night.
Exeunt. Scene 7. Belmont. A room in Portia's house. Flourish of cornets. Enter Portia with the Prince of Morocco and their train.
Go draw aside the curtains, and discover the several caskets to this noble prince. Now make your choice.
The first, of gold, who this inscription bears, who chooseth me shall gain what many men desire. The second, silver, which this promise carries, who chooseth me shall get as much as he deserves. This third, dull lead, with warning all is blunt, who chooseth me must give and hazard all he hath. How shall I know if I do choose the right?
The one of them contains my picture, prince. If you choose that, then I am yours withal.
Some god direct my judgment. Let me see. I will survey the inscriptions back again. What says this leaden casket? Who chooseth me must give and hazard all he hath. Must give. For what? For lead? Hazard for lead. This casket threatens. Men that hazard all do it in hope of fair advantages. A golden mine stoops not to shows of dross. I'll then nor give nor hazard aught for lead. What says the silver with her virgin hue? Who chooseth me shall get as much as he deserves. As much as he deserves. Pause there, Morocco, and weigh thy value with an even hand. If thou be'st rated by thy estimation, thou dost deserve enough, and yet enough may not extend so far as to the lady. And yet to be afeard of my deserving were but a weak disabling of myself. As much as I deserve, why, that's the lady. I do in birth deserve her, and in fortunes, in graces, and in qualities of breeding. But more than these, in love I do deserve. What if I strayed no farther, but chose here? Let's see once more this saying graved in gold. Who chooseth me shall gain what many men desire. Why, that's the lady. All the world desires her. From the four corners of the earth they come to kiss this shrine, this mortal-breathing saint. The Hyrcanian deserts and the vasty wilds of wide Arabia are as thoroughfares now for princes to come view fair Portia. The watery kingdom, whose ambitious head spits in the face of heaven, is no bar to stop the foreign spirits, but they come as o'er a brook to see fair Portia. One of these three contains her heavenly picture. Is it like that lead contains her? 'Twere damnation to think so base a thought. It were too gross to rib her cerecloth in the obscure grave. Or shall I think in silver she's immured, being 10 times undervalued to tried gold? O sinful thought! Never so rich a gem was set in worse than gold. They have in England a coin that bears the figure of an angel, stamped in gold, but that's ensculpt upon. But here an angel in a golden bed lies all within. Deliver me the key. Here do I choose, and thrive I as I may.
There, take it, prince, and if my form lie there, then I am yours.
He unlocks the golden casket.
Oh, hell! What have we here? A carrion death, within whose empty eye there is a written scroll. I'll read the writing. All that glisters is not gold. Often have you heard that told. Many a man his life hath sold, but my outside to behold. Gilded tombs do worms enfold. Had you been as wise as bold, young in limbs, in judgment old, your answer had not been enscrolled. Fare you well. Your suit is cold. Cold indeed, at labor lost. Then farewell, heat, and welcome, frost. Portia, adieu. I have too grieved a heart to take a tedious leave. Thus losers part.
Exit with his train. Flourish of cornets.
A gentle riddance. Draw the curtains. Go. Let all of his complexion choose me so.
Exeunt. Scene 8. Venice. A street. Enter Salarino and Salanio.
Why, man, I saw Bassanio under sail. With him is Gratiano gone along, and in their ship I am sure Lorenzo is not.
The villain Jew with outcries raised the Duke, who went with him to search Bassanio's ship.
He came too late. The ship was under sail. But there the Duke was given to understand that in a gondola were seen together Lorenzo and his amorous Jessica. Besides, Antonio certified the Duke they were not with Bassanio in his ship.
I never heard a passion so confused, so strange, outrageous, and so variable as the dog Jew did utter in the streets. My daughter, O my ducats, O my daughter, fled with a Christian, O my Christian ducats, justice, the law, my ducats, and my daughter, a sealed bag, two sealed bags of ducats, of double ducats, stolen from me by my daughter, and jewels, two stones, two rich and precious stones, stolen by my daughter. Justice, find the girl, she hath the stones upon her, and the ducats.
Why, all the boys in Venice follow him, crying, His stones, his daughter, and his ducats.
Let good Antonio look he keep his day, or he shall pay for this.
Mary, well remembered. I reasoned with a Frenchman yesterday, who told me, in the narrow seas that part the French and English, there miscarried a vessel of our country richly fraught. I thought upon Antonio when he told me, and wished in silence that it were not his.
You were best to tell Antonio what you hear, yet do not suddenly, for it may grieve him.
A kinder gentleman treads not the earth. I saw Bassanio and Antonio part. Bassanio told him he would make some speed of his return. He answered, Do not so. Slubber not business for my sake, Bassanio, but stay the very ripening of the time, and for the Jew's bond which he hath of me, let it not enter in your mind of love. Be merry, and employ your chiefest thoughts to courtship, and such fair ostents of love as shall conveniently become you there. And even there, his eye being big with tears, turning his face, he put his hand behind him, and with affection wondrous sensible, he wrung Bassanio's hand, and so they parted.
I think he only loves the world for him. I pray thee, let us go and find him out, and quicken his embraced heaviness with some delight or other.
Do we so?
Exeunt. Scene 9. Belmont, a room in Portia's house. Enter Nerissa with a servitor.
Quick, quick, I pray thee, draw the curtain straight. The Prince of Aragon hath ta'en his oath, and comes to his election presently.
Flourish of cornets. Enter the Prince of Aragon, Portia, and their trains.
Behold, there stand the caskets, noble prince. If you choose that wherein I am contained, straight shall our nuptial rites be solemnized. But if you fail, without more speech, my lord, you must be gone from hence immediately.
I am enjoined by oath to observe three things. First, never to unfold to any one which casket 'twas I chose. Next, if I fail of the right casket, never in my life to woo a maid in way of marriage. Lastly, if I do fail in fortune of my choice, immediately to leave you and be gone.
To these injunctions every one doth swear that comes to hazard for my worthless self.
And so have I addressed me. Fortune now to my heart's hope. Gold, silver, and base lead. Who chooseth me must give and hazard all he hath. You shall look fairer ere I give or hazard. What says the golden chest? Ha, let me see. Who chooseth me shall gain what many men desire. What many men desire? That many may be meant by the fool multitude, that choose by show, not learning more than the fond eye doth teach, which prize not to the interior, but, like the martlet, builds in the weather on the outward wall, even in the force and road of casualty. I will not choose what many men desire, because I will not jump with common spirits and rank me with the barbarous multitudes. Why then, to thee, thou silver treasure-house, tell me once more what title thou dost bear. Who chooseth me shall get as much as he deserves. And well said, too. For who shall go about to cozen fortune and be honourable without the stamp of merit? Let none presume to wear an undeserved dignity. Oh, that estates, degrees, and offices were not derived corruptly, and that clear honour were purchased by the merit of the wearer! How many then should cover that stand bare? How many be commanded that command? How much low peasantry would then be gleaned from the true seed of honour? And how much honour picked from the chaff and ruin of the times to be new varnished? Well, but to my choice. Who chooseth me shall get as much as he deserves. I will assume desert. Give me a key for this, and instantly unlock my fortunes here.
He opens the silver casket.
Too long a pause for that which you find there.
What's here? The portrait of a blinking idiot presenting me a schedule? I will read it. How much unlike art thou to Portia? How much unlike my hopes and my deservings? Who chooseth me shall have as much as he deserves. Did I deserve no more than a fool's head? Is that my prize? Are my deserts no better?
To offend and judge are distinct offices, and of opposed natures.
What is here? The fire 7 times tried this, 7 times tried that judgment is, that did never choose amiss. Some there be that shadows kiss, such have but a shadow's bliss. There be fools alive, I wis, silvered o'er, and so was this. Take what wife you will to bed, I will ever be your head, so begone you are sped. Still more fool I shall appear by the time I linger here. With one fool's head I came to woo, but I go away with 2. Sweet adieu, I'll keep my oath, patiently to bear my wrath.
Exit Aragon with his train.
Thus hath the candle singed the moth. Oh, these deliberate fools! When they do choose, they have the wisdom by their wit to lose.
The ancient saying is no heresy. Hanging and wiving goes by destiny.
Come, draw the curtain, Nerissa.
Enter a servant.
Where is my lady?
Here, what would my lord?
Madam, there is alighted at your gate a young Venetian, one that comes before to signify the approaching of his lord, from whom he bringeth sensible regreets, to wit, besides commends and courteous breath, gifts of rich value. Yet I have not seen so likely an ambassador of love. A day in April never came so sweet, to show how costly summer was at hand, as this forspurrer comes before his lord.
No more, I pray thee. I am half afeard thou wilt say anon he is some kin to thee. Thou spent such high day wit in praising him. Come, come, Nerissa, for I long to see quick Cupid's post that comes so mannerly.
Bassanio, lord love, if thy will it be.
Exeunt. End of Act 2.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.